Soldier Day Podcast is a product of the Non-Commissioned Officer and Soldier Program Directorate at the Association of the United States Army, lovingly known as AUSA. Soldier Day subjects focus on those topics that are relevant and needed by our soldiers and their families serving in the regular Army, Army National Guard, and the Army Reserve. Hello, everyone. I'm Command Sergeant Major Retired Troy Welch, and welcome to this edition of Soldier Day Podcast. Today, we welcome the recently appointed new AMC Army Materiel Command, Command Sergeant Major Alberto Delgado. Command Sergeant Major Alberto Delgado assumed duties as the 17th Command Sergeant Major of the United States Army Materiel Command on July 23, 2020. As AMC Sergeant Major, Sergeant Major Delgado serves as the Commanding General's personal advisor on all enlisted-related matters, primarily focused on the quality of life for soldiers, civilians, and families across the command, as well as the training of non-commissioned officer corps and soldiers. Sergeant Major Delgado, thank you so much for joining us on our Soldier Day podcast.
Command Sergeant Major Retired Welch, thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure to be a part of this podcast.
Well, we're happy to have you. So, Sergeant Major, as you are very well aware of Sergeant Major Grinston's initiative, This Is My Squad, and what we've seen a lot lately on social media and some of the Twitter posts and Facebook Live posts from not only him, but the Secretary of the Army and the Chief of Staff of the Army, they talk about getting to know your squad and talking about where they're from and how they grew up. So I'd like to start that off with you. So, I mean, if you could, besides what's in your bio, can you tell our listeners, you know, where did you grow up and why did you choose the Army and what point in your career did you decide to make it a career?
Thank you. That's a great question. First of all, I'm of Puerto Rican descent. You know, my mom and father moved from the island. I was born in New York City, Lower Manhattan. I was raised in New York City, 17 years when I graduated from high school. Coming from pretty rough parts of Lower Manhattan back in the 80s, there wasn't many options. And I signed up for a technical college, and I did 6 months at New York John Jay College. And I kind of wasn't really focused or interested. So, you know, I decided to join the Army National Guard because I didn't want to go all the way in without committing. I wanted to make sure that this was something I wanted to do. So in August of 1987, I joined the Army National Guard. I spent about a year and a half in the Guard. And after the year and a half, I still wasn't focused, wasn't going to college, and didn't feel that I was doing nothing productive. So I decided in January of 1989 to join the active duty Army.
So what point did you decide to make it a career? I mean, you gave it a test run in the Guard, and then you decided to go on the active component in 1989. And did you have it in your mind that you were going to make it a career? And as you found yourself progressing through the Army, did you face any personal challenges of your own?
You know, my first duty station was Ansbach, Germany, 3rd to 17th Field Artillery Unit. So I just thought I was going to come in for a couple years, kind of get some GI Bill, get my life together, see what I was going to do. But after the first 2 years, you know, we happened to be deployed to Operation Desert Storm, Desert Shield. So when we came back from Desert Storm, Desert Shield, we inactivated in Germany and reactivated Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And at this time, I met a young lady and we was dating for about a year and a half. And then we ended up getting married when we both came back. She was a soldier too. We ended up getting married. We came back from Desert Storm, right? And then, it started off as a job, right? First couple years, it was a job. And then, you know, after 4 years, I went to promotion board, got promoted, corporal, then made E5, sergeant. I started to enjoy really what I was doing. And then it went from a job to a career. So, you know what? This is a good career. I could do 20 years, get a nice retirement check, you know, do something else after that, have benefits, education. And after the 10 years after career, it became a passion, Troy. And when it became a passion, that's when I noticed that this is what I want to do. I want to take care of soldiers. You know, I want to lead soldiers. I want to take care of families. And 33 years later, Troy, you know, I mean, I'm still doing what I love to do, taking care of soldiers, taking care of families. It's just a passion. This is all I know. Since 17 years old to 51 years old, I've been a soldier, soldier for life, and just taking care of soldiers, taking care of families, and being a soldier is just, it's an amazing feeling, Troy. It's all I know.
Well, you know, I joined the Army when I was 17 as well, so I fully understand where you're coming from. And at some point, as you're progressing through your career, you do realize that this is just a little bit more than a job, right? And then you find yourself being more and more committed because as you progress through the ranks, you got people who depend on you, who are looking up to you. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're thrusted into this leadership role that maybe initially you hadn't really any intent. Like I know I didn't, you know, I thought I'll come in, I'll serve my country and I'll get out and I'll go do something else. But like many other stories, 30 years later, right, you know, you're retiring after what seems to be a blink of the eye, all of a sudden it's gone. So I can appreciate that. You mentioned field artillery, but I know for a fact that you're a quartermaster guy. So when did you switch from being a field artillery person and going into the quartermaster corps?
When I came in 87 and, I joined the Guard as a 13 Bravo, I did, you know, my National Guard time as a field artillery. So when I joined active duty in January 1989, they didn't give me much options. They said, you know, you can go come back in as artillery man, go to your first duty station. I wanted to serve. I wanted to join. So I did that. My first 4 years in the Army from 1989 to 1993, when I got back from Desert Storm, I started going to classes, doing what we call BSAP, and I raised my GT score to 114. So when I raised my GT score to 114, when my reenlistment window came open, I had a lot of options. It was good. So, you know, 76 Charlie back then, which is now 92 Alpha, a PLO TAMS clerk, was one of the options. And I really liked it because I dealt with the TAMS clerk in the motor pool as a 13 Bravo and I dispatched my vehicles and stuff. So I said, you know, I think this is something that I can do in the future. There's some benefits that I can use on the civilian side. In February of 1993 was when I reenlisted and I went to Fort Lee and reclassified as a 76 Charlie. It was during the transition time. It was right before we transitioned to 92 Alpha. I went to the last 76 Charlie class in February of 1993. So I graduated as a 76 Charlie. And then once I graduated in April, I went back to Fort Sill to my artillery unit and actually served for a couple months as a TAMS clerk. I ended up coming on orders to Fort Wainwright, Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska. And that's when it converted 92 Alpha. So I TCS to Fairbanks, Alaska in July of 1993 and went to a class 247 warehouse and I was the storage NCOIC. So that was my first job as the 92 Alpha and that set me up. The conditions were great. It was a 706 Main Support Battalion. That's when 6th Infantry Division had just converted to 6th Infantry Brigade in Fort Wainwright, Alaska. So it just gave me a great opportunity. And I think my first 4 years, I love being a quartermaster. I love being a logistician. But I think those first 4 years on active duty as a field artillery man really, really gave me a foundation and set me up for my leadership style. Because the camaraderie and the cohesion in the combat arms in the artillery unit, as a PFC and a specialist, my platoon sergeant, what we call smoke, would put me out there and we would give PT and kind of prep me. So when I got promoted sergeant and became a logistician, I felt that I was ahead of my peers just based on those 4 years in that type of organization, Troy.
I can understand that. Kind of set the foundation for who you are today. I mean, we all have that point in our career, I think, where something happened that kind of helped you set yourself up for success, gave you that path that you were probably looking for. Now, that's an awesome story, and I appreciate you taking the time to share that with us. I know it's in your bio and people will see that, but you know, me, I've known you for a long time and I wanted you to share how you went from a field artillery guy and came to the only MOS or the only corps that probably matters, and that's the quartermaster corps. We can say that. Now I will probably get some hate mail for saying that, but that's okay. That's okay. Well, Sergeant Major, you have served in a variety of units throughout your career, you know, at all the levels. So can you tell us what makes serving with such a large worldwide organization like AMC unique?
This is an amazing organization. I mean, Army Material Command, it's a unique organization that comprises of 190,000 soldiers, civilians, and contractors across 10 major subordinate commands, while majority of our workforce and civilians work for 26 arsenals, depots, and ammunition plants to 75 installations worldwide. It's essential ensuring our warfighters are the best equipped and best sustained fighting force in the world, and that we provide first-class service and programs that enhance the quality of life for our Army and our communities. We got MCOM with all the garrisons, so we're responsible for the quality of life, for CDCs, for gyms, everything that we do to take care of soldiers and families. And then on the strategic and enterprise level, I mean, all the arsenals and depots from every commodity, from class one to class nine, with class eight, with COVID going on and the vaccine and all the stuff going on. I mean, it's just amazing to know everything that AMC provides for the warfighter and for the strategic and civilian workforce. I couldn't ask for a better job or a better way to end my career of this is my last job. Because, I mean, I've been fortunate, you know, to your point. I've served at every level. When I left Fort Wainwright, Alaska, I was fortunate to go back to the home of the quartermaster, Fort Lee. And I went to the NCO Academy, where I served as small group leader for what we call ALC now, but back then it was BNOT, you know, and I was teaching SARS 2A and warehouse distribution, and kind of really, really set the foundation for me to understand my job and my MOS and leadership. Training NCOs between drill and ceremony, between automation and mentors. I remember you, Sergeant Major Welch, you was one of those mentors that was out there that kind of, you know, I had guys that saw something in me. And as a young staff sergeant, I remember they used to say, hey, Sergeant Delgado, you got a lot of potential, man. Just keep doing what you're doing and you're going to go a long way. And that's where I'm a true believer as a leader that we have to pay it forward. Somebody invested in me and saw something in me and spend the time to develop me. I do it every day, Sergeant Major. Every day I can, I'm reaching out to subordinates. I'm reaching out to leaders and making sure that when I see a soldier that has a lot of potential, a leader has a lot of potential, that I spend the time to coach, train, and mentor. When it's time for me to go in next phase of life, I want to make sure that I set the Army up for success the way somebody set me up for success, Army.
You make an interesting point. I've always said that somebody gave me the mentoring I needed and shared their knowledge with me as I progressed through the ranks, much like you just mentioned. I was always of the opinion that somebody gave it to me, so I shouldn't be stingy with it, right? I need to share what was shared with me. So when we do leave the Army, because at some point in time we all do, especially when you make it to the senior ranks of the Army, you know, when you step away, you can't help, and I know every leader does this, is that when you leave, you got to sit back and look and say, did I leave the Army in good hands? Did I do everything that I could do to make sure that the people that were under my charge or I worked with were trained and to eventually someday, you know, replace me? So I appreciate that. And I know you did it. And I know you did it well. And I'm sure that everybody you've touched along the way is definitely going to benefit from your leadership and your knowledge. You briefly touched on MCOM, which has been a recent change to AMC. You came in back in July to be the AMC Sergeant Major. What were your thoughts on that? I mean, here you are now. I mean, AMC structure's changed a little bit from the past, and now you have MCOM. Did you have to change your, or were you thinking about that when you came in as a Sergeant Major to understand the base ops piece of it, if you will, if you want to call that, or installation management? And how did that impact you?
It's one of these things that I've just been fortunate that I've been at the right place at the right time. And I had great leaders that put me in position of success. Because I think back, you know, my first Command Sergeant Major job, you know, when Sergeant Major retired, Gabby Russell called me. She said, hey, I got a garrison position in Heidelberg, and I know you're a designee. You want to go to a BSB or sustainment unit, but you know, I think this is a good position for you. And are you willing to take it? And I said, yes, Sergeant Major, of course. I'm going to do whatever the Army tells me to do. So I was fortunate enough, Troy, that my first job as a battalion Command Sergeant Major, I was the garrison Command Sergeant Major for Mannheim, Germany. And not only I was the garrison Sergeant Major for Mannheim, Germany, you know, I was the last Command Sergeant Major for Mannheim, Germany. So the experience I got from not only being a garrison Sergeant Major, but closing the facility and understanding overseas is a little different because in the States, you got a lot of support. But overseas, you work with the Polizei, with the Lord Mayor and the community. And it's almost like you're the civilian equivalent mayor on the military side for the Germans. So, I mean, I was fortunate that my first job as Command Sergeant Major was a garrison Command Sergeant Major. So who knew 13 years down the road, MCOM will fall under AMC. And then I would be the AMC Saw Major over MCOM and Garrison. So, you know, it's one of these things that being at the right place at the right time and just being fortunate enough that, you know, leaders see something in you and they put you in the right jobs in the right position. So being a former Garrison Command Sergeant Major really helped me in my foundation that I understand what MCOM does. I understand the impact that we do for a community, for the soldiers' families, between child development centers, gymnasiums, everything that they provide, housing, quality of life, barracks.
Yeah, you're like the city manager, right?
Yes, sir. The city. Hey, you got DPW, you got DTMS, which is your op and all that stuff. And you run the city, everything from the festivals in Germany to housing when your subordinate commands or your tenant commands have issues with barracks or housing. You know, they call the Garrison Sergeant Major, and I'm the point of contact, even with Army Emergency Relief. Something as important as that, people don't understand that as a Command Sergeant Major, the commander delegates to me at a certain amount of money where I can grant between me and the AER manager, I can recommend whether grant or loan to take care of soldiers and families. So, I mean, there's so much power in the patch. And, you know, MCOM does so much for soldiers, families, and civilians that I've just been blessed and fortunate that I had the opportunity to serve as Garrison Sergeant Major now that we own MCOM. I totally understand. And just last week, we spent 2 days, me and General Daly spent 2 days at Joint Base San Antonio in Fort Hood, Texas, just going through what they do and how quality of life. And we went through some barracks to make sure that we're building brand new barracks and make sure that we have the right structure. We're putting the right things in the barracks. The Sergeant Major of the Army, I run it by him. I say, SMA, this is what soldiers say they want. What's your recommendation? And he empowers me and he trusts me. He gives me some guidance. And then I go back and my boss empowers me. And then we're just making barracks of the future, you know, SSAs of the future, you know, yeah. Dining facilities of the future. And when I talk about the future, Troy, we're looking at 2035. What AMC is trying to do, we want to make sure we get it right, Troy. We don't want to do it 2 or 3 years out and then we look and say, hey, why we didn't do this? Why we missed that? So we're looking 15 years out. So 15 years from now, when our sons and daughters come and replace us, they say, wow, man, I'm glad these guys built these barracks and these dining facilities because they got it right. So it's important, the emphasis we put in the quality of life for our soldiers and families, Troy.
It really is. The importance of having a happy home front when that family member, soldier, deploys or even goes away for an NTC rotation or whatever, there is comfort in knowing that everything back home is okay and we've got good housing and we've got good facilities for them to use. And you're right. Unless you've been in that seat as a Garrison Sergeant Major, you really can't appreciate everything that that job entails. I had a taste of it myself in Nuremberg, and we had to draw down Nuremberg. So I feel your pain on drawing down a Kasern or a post-camper station in Germany during the drawdown time. It's a lot of work. And you hit on it. You're the mayor. You're a city manager because you run everything. And in going with that, you also receive all the pain, right? I mean, my phone, I'm sure yours did too, rang off the hook. There's one issue here, one issue there, and you got to address them all. I mean, you have to do that. So I can appreciate it. I think they got the right person there in the job to make sure that those soldiers and families on the installations are very well taken care of. And I know MCOM has got a good team, so I think it's in good hands. So the SMA and Signature Initiative, we talked about earlier when I asked you to kind of give a little background on yourself. This is my squad. Can you tell me what that means to you and who's in your squad, Sergeant Major?
You know, it's funny because you get to different levels of responsibility. At some point, you know, if you're not on a gun line, if you're not in a warehouse, if you're not in a platoon, we look at squads different. But the reality is everybody has a squad, Troy. You know, I mean, even at the most senior level, my squad is General Daly, my commanding general, the deputy commanding general, Flem B. Walker, Lieutenant General Flem B. Walker, Master Sergeant Cruz, my executive assistant, Miss Pam, the executive assistant for the CG, Miss Andrea Turner, which is my civilian executive assistant. So I got a CW4 Massonette, which is our admin warrant officer that runs all awards and administration for the sixth floor. And then the XO for the commanding general, Colonel Henson, and the aide-de-camp, Lieutenant Colonel Chris Jones. And of course, let me not forget Master Sergeant Navarez, which is the enlisted aide for General Daley. So, you know, as a food service guy, Troy, how important that job is. You know, I mean, he takes care of the general, and the CG lives and dies by his enlisted aide, makes sure that, you know, he's at the right place at the right time in the right uniform. So it's important to me that even at the most senior level, understanding who's in my squad, and not only knowing who's in my squad, but knowing who they are. We're at a point now that I grew up in the Army. Back in the 80s and early 90s, my sergeant, he knew everything about me. He knew my mother, my father, my sister, my brother. He knew when I was having a good day or bad day, just based on my personality, if something changed. He knew if something was going on in my life. This is what This Is My Squad is about. It's about knowing your people, knowing the people that serve with you and for you, and being empathetic to people. We got a mission and a job, but it's just like the SMA and Chief, people first. If you're not taking care of your people, I understand that the Army says mission first, people always back in the days. But, you know, the reality is the mission is going to get accomplished if you take care of your people, man. If you don't take care of your people, you can't accomplish the mission. And it's all about your people. And I always said, Troy, you know, we re-enlist soldiers, but we retain families. If you don't take care of that soldier's family, at the end of the day, you know, as a married man, for as long as you've been married, if you go home and you're not happy and mama's not happy, life is not good. If you don't take care of that soldier, whatever stress they got and they take it home, it affects the family. So you got to understand that. We're in a people business. So when you're not taking care of that soldier and he goes home and he, you know, he's having dinner with the family, and he's like, man, I really don't enjoy going to work, or just a stressful day. It affects everybody in that household. It just doesn't affect that soldier. So you got to think bigger than just a soldier. You got to think about families. And if the wife knows that you're not happy and she's not happy, then we lose good soldiers, Troy.
You're absolutely right. And I like what you said. And I know it's been said a lot before about you reenlist a soldier, but you also retain the family. And I know there's a lot of things out there that help the family members, you know. I think what you said is on point, that if you can't create a productive working environment for your soldiers where they feel valued and they feel respected and they feel like their leadership cares about them and really truly wants to know and understand them, and then you teach, coach, and mentor them to progress in the Army, if they don't feel that way, that baggage, if you will, goes home. And you can't help, you know, try as we may to separate home life from work life, it's easier said than done. You know, leaders like you who are able to create that type of environment at the workplace and then also encourage those commands that fall under AMC to do the same thing, you get a more productive soldier if you just encourage that and build that life. So good on you for doing that. And it's infectious. If you do it, the other sergeants major see you doing it, and other junior leaders see you doing it, then they're going to do it because we're setting the example, right? And so good on you for going in there and setting that environment. And I know you've done that your whole career, right? And it is important. It's very important. And I'll tell you that the Not In My Squad was the great thing, and then the natural transition to This Is My Squad. It's pretty cool, and I'm glad that you're setting those things in motion and as you continue to settle into your new role there. At AUSA's annual meeting last October, the Army announced the, you know, you talked about it first, the number one priority is people, people first. And you hit on it a little bit about what that means to you, but can you expand a little bit more about how AMC as a whole is putting people first? And you mentioned you got large numbers there, but you've got a large population of civilians as well as military. So how are you guys working that within AMC?
Every time I talk to my subordinate leaders, I tell them it's so important that you make your work environment productive. People want to enjoy coming to work. You know, I always told myself, Troy, you know, the day that I wake up and I'm not happy or I'm not enjoying coming to work, it's time for me to do something else. And I won't allow that environment, because as a leader, you set the conditions. It's my role as a leader to set the conditions. So whether I'm having a bad day or something's going on with me personally, I have a responsibility to deal with that on my own and make sure that I'm not taking that out on my subordinates or the people that work around me, because it affects everybody. The way you treat people, my leader development program, you know, I got one page that I use the three R's, right? And when I talk about the three R's, I talk about respect, reputation, and relationships. And when I talk about respect, respect is a two-way street, Troy. Everybody thinks that you got to respect higher and respect your leaders and stuff. But you know what? You have to respect your subordinates. No matter whether it's the private in the army or the general, we're all human beings and we all want to be treated a certain way. And it's how you treat people. It's infectious, Troy, man. I mean, you, yeah. If you set a positive climate, you know, negative behaviors, it just rubs off and it provides a negative environment. And if you allow it, shame on you, because as a leader, you set the conditions and you set the environment. And if your subordinates and your leaders know that you're not going to allow negative behaviors or toxic leadership, they won't do it, because they know that you're not going to be successful around me, because yeah. I won't tolerate it. You know, I won't tolerate it, Troy. So, I mean, and on the civilian side, you know, General Daley, not only soldiers, but we're looking at the hiring process. We look at GS 13 to 15. We're looking at diversity, inclusion, and making sure that we have a diverse organization. Because if you look at it, then historical data has proven that diverse organizations, very successful. If everybody looks like you, talks like you, and walks like you, nobody's going to give you a different perspective. That's why the Army, every 2 years, we PCS leaders or we bring new leaders in, because they need a new perspective, somebody with a different view, and say, okay, we've been doing stuff like this for the last umpteen years. Are we doing it because this is the way we always done it? Or are we doing it because it's the right thing to do? I don't believe in that saying when you ask somebody, hey, why are we doing it? Well, we always done it like that. Well, is it the right reason that we're doing it because we always done it? Does it make sense? So today's soldier, it's amazing, Troy, because we grew up in a different army. You know, today's soldier, you know, when you give them a mission or you give them a task, you got to be ready to answer why. Because, yeah. You know, these young soldiers are smart, man. They're innovative. They're smart. They got a lot of ideas and thoughts. You know, when we grew up in the army, where if we asked why, oh, man, it was going to be a bad day. But nowadays, soldiers ask why. But when you give them the why, it motivates them and you get the job done. And sometimes you'll be amazed, Troy, that just because we've done things the way we've done it for so many years, you get a young soldier to say, well, Sergeant, you ever thought of this? And you're like, wow, you know, that makes a lot of sense. You don't give them credit. Too much credit, but you're like, man, that makes a lot of sense. So I think treating people with dignity and respect and listening to them, because sometimes as leaders, we think we have all the answers and we always want to solve everybody's problem, Troy. But sometimes soldiers just want you to listen. They don't want you to solve their problem. They just want you to listen. Sometimes they just want to talk to you with no feedback, just express some issues. Sometimes we're so quick to want to resolve every problem because we're leaders, but that's what it is about taking care of people, Troy.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right and very well said. It's kind of our natural instinct. When a soldier brings you an issue, you want to jump into action and you want to fix the problem, but it's a very good point. You know, true words can never be spoken, that sometimes you just want you to listen. Just hear me out. I don't want you to go solve world hunger. I just want you to hear what I got to say, right? And that's sometimes that's all they need. So that's a good point. Very good point. You're right. These soldiers are so, so smart. And the day you stop learning and the day you stop smiling as you lace up your boots, I agree with you. Maybe it's time for you to find a new profession or retire. So, yeah, the Army is, we're like anybody, any other organization, we're always competing for talent, right? So you had your reasons. I have my reasons for choosing to serve in the Army. So what do you think? Why should young people today join the Army? And, you know, I know what the benefit was for me, and I'm sure you know what the benefit was for you, but we have tangible and intangible benefits that kind of set us apart from the civilian community, if you will. So if you don't mind, could you just take a few minutes and tell us, you know, why do you think people today, why should young people today join our army, the best army in the world? And what do you think the benefits are for joining the army versus, say, another service?
You'll be surprised that over my last 33 years, I've noticed that the army has become a family business, Troy. It's amazing how many soldiers are serving because their dad, their grandfather, their great-grandfather served, and they've seen the quality of life. They've seen the benefits. They reap the rewards of living in housing. And if you think about it, Troy, with all the stuff going on in the world and everything, you know, the dynamics, me growing up in projects in New York City, my three adult kids, the quality of life, we lived in gated communities all my career. If you think about it, right?
Yeah,
post
right.
Camps and installations are gated communities with a guard. After 9/11, life changed. We went from open installations to closed installations. If you don't have a CAT card, if you don't have a government ID card, if you're not signed in by somebody, you can't just walk into an Army installation. So, I mean, it's a sense of security. So, you know, you live in housing and the kids are out playing and soldiers have dependents and wives meet the other wives. It's a gated community, Troy, man. At the end of the day, you know, we're not paying, but we have the luxury that we have guards guarding our installation where just everybody can't walk into your housing area. So, I mean, first and foremost, that's one of the most important things for my kids. They grew up in a safe environment and very comfortable. And, you know, like I told you, it's a family business. The more you think about it, our sons and daughters serve because there's a sense of purpose. They see what their father and mothers accomplished. They see the quality of life, all the great things the Army provided, from education to housing to gymnasiums. So I think it's a purpose larger than oneself, you know. And then it's a sense of service, giving back to the nation. The majority of soldiers, you'll be amazed. You ask a soldier why you're serving. After 9/11, guys were just knocking down the door to come to serve their nation, serve their country, to protect. Everybody doesn't realize freedom's not free, Troy. You know, the 1% that served their country gives the right to everybody else in this country to freedom, for the liberty and the great things that they get. And it's a camaraderie. It's a brotherhood and a sisterhood. You're never going to get no corporation, no industry, no job is going to give you a sense of brotherhood and sisterhood like the military. You know, Troy, you know, everywhere you go, when you PCS, whether you're artillery, whether you're logistics, whether you're infantry, whether you're ranger, whether you're special operations, we take care of each other. You never leave a fallen comrade. Everybody's always looking out for each other, always making sure. If you're missing furniture, people give you furniture. If you don't have a car, people give you a car to your car ship. It's a community that I've never seen it. 33 years in the Army. And when you retire, if you think about it, Troy, when you retire, every soldier always is like, man, I miss. If I could put my uniform back on, I would put it back on in a day. And I enjoy my retirement life, but I miss that camaraderie and that brotherhood and sisterhood, that soldier for life mentality that you don't get that in the civilian world. The skills, the Army has more than 400 different occupational skills. You go see a recruiter, you got 400 jobs where you can be a nurse, a doctor, a special operation warfighter, artilleryman, work in a hospital as an x-ray technician. I mean, the skill set and the education benefits. So if you do decide to do 4 years and go back and be a productive civilian in civilian world, you bring back a skill set and a discipline. The discipline that the Army provides you, you don't get it nowhere. You know, I mean, I was a young 17-year-old kid out of New York City with no discipline and just didn't know what I wanted to do in the future and never imagined 30 years later I would accomplish what I accomplished. I mean, the Army, it allows you to be whoever, whatever. Sky's the limit. You can be a four-star general or you can be a command sergeant major for a four-star general. The opportunity is there. It's what you choose to do with it, Troy. I think that's the great thing of serving our country, and the tangible and intangible things of being a soldier.
I agree. Very well said. I mean, you can come in here and, you know, you get a good skill. And then if you decide not to make it a career, the Army's not for everybody. No service is for everybody. But at least if you step away, the chances of you getting out and going off to be a very productive citizen, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, are significantly increased, right? Because you got a skill set, you've learned something. So when you step out there in the world, I mean, you're ready for it. So.
And Troy, I missed one of the most important things, if you think about it, the health benefits, Troy.
Oh, absolutely.
You know how much it is for a person to have a baby and the expenses, the hospital expenses and the health benefits. My daughter or my son, they can have a little runny nose or a sniffle and they'll go to the emergency room or to the hospital as many times to make sure the kids take care of, while in the civilian world, it's so expensive that if you're not dying, sometimes you're not going to go to the hospital, Troy. So, I mean, just what we provide in medical services alone, it's tremendous, Troy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just an added security, right? You don't have to worry about that. So, no, you're absolutely right. My last question for you, Sergeant Major, and then we'll wrap this up if you could. I know myself, coming up through the Army, I had several mentors, and I'm sure you had mentors. So could you tell me, you know, who was it that mentored you, and what was probably the most important piece of advice or guidance you received from your mentors?
I'm going to go back when I was a brand new private in Ansbach, Germany, and this was probably when you was in Nuremberg, closing down Nuremberg, because I remember Nuremberg was about 45 minutes from Ansbach, and I used to enjoy driving up to Nuremberg because that was a nice city to go to, Nuremberg, Troy.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, my first son, Marlon Brando Fifth, he was from the island, from St. Croix, but his mom must have been a big movie buff to name him Marlon Brando, you know, Marlon Brando Fifth. Yeah. But, you know, he was my first son. When I took over as the AMC Command Sergeant Major, the first phone call I got, and the guards called me and they said, "Hey, Sergeant Major, you know, some retired Sergeant Major's calling, and we didn't give him your number, but he left his number." And he called me 30 years later just to congratulate me and tell me how proud he was of me. Because I was a young private. I was a knucklehead, Troy, man. You know, I was a young kid from New York City. I thought I knew it all, you know, Puerto Rican kid, thought he was cool as ice and stuff, man. You know, you couldn't tell me nothing, Troy, man. But he pulled me.
Every other 17-year-old to join the Army, yeah.
but I wasn't focused, man. And I really didn't think the Army was for me or was going to be a career thing for me. And he saw something in me and he pulled me in his office one day and told me, hey, Private, come here, Private Delgado. He invested in me. He spent time. He counseled me. He guided me. He got to know me. He knew my family. The 3 years I served under him, I went from E1 to E5. And just the impact he made on me in my life and my career and the leadership that he showed me, how to be a leader and what leaders do and how to take care of soldiers, really set the foundation for me on what my expectation is for leaders and what I expect my subordinate leaders to do for soldiers, you know. And that was the early part of my career. And then later on in my career, you know, when I was a senior NCO, I ran across a Command Sergeant Major named David Roman. He was the Army War College Command Sergeant Major, you know, and I met him in processing, and he saw something in me as a young Master Sergeant that he invested in me. He told me what first sergeant job I needed to do, what's going to set me up for success, and just spent a lot of time with me on the senior stuff to develop me, to prepare me to be a Command Sergeant Major, and just an amazing leader that took the time out to invest in me. And then came behind him, Command Sergeant Major Frank Saunders. I mean, you talk about the most elegant and the most smooth Command Sergeant Major, that just the way he conducts himself and how he treats people and his leadership style. I mean, I took away so much from Command Sergeant Major Frank Saunders that everybody respected him. Everybody looked up to him. Everybody followed him just because how he treated people. It's amazing just the simple fact of how you treat people, how people want to follow you and want to be like you as a leader. And those two leaders, Sergeant Major David Roman and Sergeant Major Frank Saunders, just set me up for success to be the Command Sergeant Major I am now, because I learned the operational side from one And I learned the people person side from the other. So it's just, I do it every day, Troy. Every time I talk to my subordinate sergeant majors, subordinate first sergeant, subordinate leaders, I tell them, I say, you have to invest in people. You have to invest in people. You got to give back. My legacy is not the jobs I held. It's not how high I went. My legacy is the people who I bring behind me. I got sergeant first classes and first sergeants that when I was a command sergeant major, second time battalion command sergeant major, these guys are now nominative two-star sergeant majors. They're brigade sergeant majors. I mean, to me, that's the impact. When the people you led grow and replace you, that's leadership. And, you know, it's not worrying about somebody passing you. Oh, man, my subordinate is higher than me. You know what? If your subordinate is higher than you, you did something right, Troy.
That's right.
You know, that's our job, you know?
Very, very well said. And I'm very familiar with both those leaders you talked about there. You had two very good mentors, and it shows, right? They're both great guys, and they prepared you for the job you have, as you said, and there couldn't have been a better choice. Well, Sergeant Major, our time has come to a close to end this edition of Soldier Day Podcast. All of us here at the Association of the United States Army want to thank Command Sergeant Major Delgado for sharing his story and providing insight about his position as the AMC Senior Enlisted Advisor. Sergeant Major Delgado, as an Army alumnus, I can say from all of us across the country, thank you for all you have done to improve our Army and maintain the Army's reputation as the greatest land power force in the world.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters Podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters Podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah!